Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast here on Thursday night. Round one of the NFL draft just finishing up. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. We're going to kind of recap our reaction from this first round. Most likely the final first round that the Browns won't have a pick here in this stretch of drafts. We'll see. Who knows? Maybe they trade next year's first round pick for like a receiver or something next year. But we'll deal with that when we have to. First round, Mary Kay, what stood out to you as you're sitting there watching this thing on Thursday night? What kind of caught your attention, I guess?
I've never seen anything like this before. The absolute scramble for quarterbacks. I mean, it was so bizarre. One quarterback after another. I remember back in the day where if you had to take the number two quarterback in the draft, you were doomed because that guy wasn't going to make it. And there were all kinds of statistics that, yeah, if you've got the number one pick and you get the number one quarterback, you're good to go. If you have to take one at number two or somewhere else, then forget it. That guy's not going to succeed. So the landscape of quarterbacking in the NFL has changed dramatically. You're seeing the athletic dual threat quarterbacks basically flood the NFL. And it's almost like, not that they're a dime a dozen, but now it just has opened up the possibilities and people are just going in and plucking them like fruit off trees, like bring them on. So that has been quite the paradigm shift, I think, in the NFL to just everybody just taking a chance, taking a flyer on a quarterback. But I will say this, and I've always been of this mind for many, many years back. I would much rather whiff on a quarterback in the first round, take a chance on one, see if he works out, than whiff on any other position in the first round. Sometimes you might hit, sometimes you might miss. But if you're going to miss 50% of the time, at least go for the quarterback and see if you can get the position that everybody needs the most. So I don't really have a problem with it. It's just bizarre to see it go down like this.
Yeah, I wonder if this is like a commentary on next year's quarterback class, if people just aren't real excited about like Quinn Ewers. But I wonder if that was part of it. And look, like, so six quarterbacks go in the first round. Maybe three of them will hit, right? Maybe three of them will work out. I mean, even if we go back to, I'm just thinking like 2018, right? That was such a great class, supposedly. Baker Mayfield didn't work in Cleveland. Sam Darnold has been a bust and hasn't figured it out. Josh Rosen was a bust. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, MVP candidates. So, you know, that's two out of the four or five. Baker's kind of maybe turning his career around now, but that took four teams. So it's really hard to draft quarterbacks. And you saw teams get desperate. And I appreciated, like, the one that stood out to me is New England staying at number three and taking Drake May, because I never liked the idea of them trading out of that pick. Because to me, if you have an opportunity to get a good quarterback at number three, you have to take it. And especially in this era when it's not as expensive to move on from these guys, it's not as crippling. You don't have to sign these guys to the contracts you used to have to sign them to when you took them this high. I think, Ashley, I'm with Mary Kay on this. If you've got a chance to take a quarterback high in the draft, you have to do it because you don't know when you're going to have that opportunity again.
Yeah, and it just seemed like, again, this illustrates the panic that can set in because of that thought. I felt like there was a palpable, almost energy change watching the draft when the Falcons took Michael Penix Jr. It seemed like, we talked about this kind of a boring draft, right? There weren't a ton of surprises, so to speak. But I guess because of that, that's the biggest one that it seemed like was the move that caught the analysts off guard on NFL Network, at least, which was the feed I was watching. Just because obviously with the Falcons this year, a huge story has been them getting Kirk Cousins. So I think that was maybe the slight surprise, but then that happens and it's like, okay, JJ McCarthy and Bo Nix suddenly go really quickly after that, because it is that perceived panic of, hey, it's really hard to hit on this position. If there's somebody we like, we need to just go and get that guy, regardless of where that pick is. Now, I don't know if the Broncos are going to be happy in a few years that they took the 12th overall pick and used it on Bo Nix. Maybe he'll be one of the guys that works out. But again, six in the first 12 picks, really, it was a run that happened so fast.
Okay, so I do want to know what you guys thought when Atlanta made that pick, because I still don't get it. I still don't understand it. I haven't even seen, like, maybe I just haven't been paying attention, but I haven't even seen the typical spin on Twitter that you usually start to see with some of these picks, these questionable picks. I don't understand it, unless Atlanta, I don't know, maybe Atlanta knows something we don't about this tampering investigation into Kirk Cousins. Mary Kay, I did not get that pick for a team that went 7-10 last year and just spent a ton of money to bring in a veteran quarterback in Kirk Cousins, why you would take a 24-year-old quarterback in Michael Penix when you have that. That's a situation that's different, I think, than what we were talking about. If you need a quarterback, you take one. But if you're set at that position, that number eight pick is really valuable. You can get a good player there, whether it's another weapon or a defensive player or that pick. I didn't understand it. And I still don't a couple hours later.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out more about this over the next few days when they really dig in and start explaining it. But I can assure you that Kirk Cousins' agent was dismayed by this, and who knows what they might do, what their move might be. Maybe he asks to be traded or something. I mean, you know, this really did shake up the early part of the draft. It was the only little buzz that we had. That was the only thing that, you know, really had people kind of talking and some eyebrows raised. So we'll have to see where that goes, because, you know, they didn't spend all that money on Kirk for nothing. And now, you know, usually when you have a first round quarterback, and especially when you take one that high, you are going to end up playing him in the first year. That's just what happens nowadays. These guys don't sit around and wait anymore. So there is going to be more to this story. We just don't know how it's going to turn out yet, but I'm guessing that some team is going to come calling and trade for Kirk Cousins.
It's so confusing. I mean, if you want to take a guy in like the third round, some young developmental quarterback in the third or fourth round, and, you know, because, you know, Kirk is getting older and you do want to hedge maybe him coming back from the Achilles. But that number eight pick, Ashley, is so valuable to add something to your team when you already have quarterback figured out, to add something that can help you like right away.
And I think for me too, it's how they went about it. I mean, Mary Kay said it right there, and the quotes from Kirk Cousins' agent that are out there on X right now and that were being talked about during these broadcasts. I mean, from what we know so far, and the Falcons haven't explained their pick yet, they were given no heads up. It sounds like Kirk Cousins got a call when they went on the clock, which seems kind of wild. It just seems like not how functional teams sort of handled these things. We talk about it all the time over the last few years. The ways to instill confidence in your quarterback and how the mental part of things factor into that position in particular. It just seems like a really sloppy way to go about it. I mean, even if they really love Michael Penix Jr. and you're like, well, you know, he's the younger guy, he can be coming up behind Kirk, we think it's a good position for him to learn. This is the number eight pick. Like we've been saying, it's about where that pick went. This isn't a second or a third round guy where it's automatically like, okay, he's the developmental guy now and he'll get to learn from Kirk Cousins while he's down here. I just think too, that part of it is really kind of messy to me, quite honestly, if you want to talk about the drama angle of it. I don't like that in terms of, if you're Kirk Cousins, I would not be happy just with that part of it too. That's a whole separate issue to me.
Ashley, was there anything that stood out to you in this first round, aside from the quarterback runs, anything that caught your attention?
I mean, I think it was just overall the run on offensive players in general, and the first 14 picks were offensive guys. And I do think, you know, for the Browns, that's maybe a good thing, right? But that could just be my opinion because I feel strongly in the last few weeks, especially just doing mock drafts and reading about who might be available. I feel strongly about them taking a defensive player for some reason now. Because I said that, that's probably not what they're going to do now. But I do think because a lot of those guys didn't go early, we knew this was a deep D-line class. It's especially deep with interior guys. So I think at the end of night one for me, that was kind of my big takeaway that, hey, the board probably fell in their favor in that aspect. Now, if it's what they're going to do, I don't know. But I think it might ultimately be helpful if that's the avenue they take tomorrow.
You know, as we kind of turn this towards the Browns, I've sort of been thinking, man, I wish they could take a receiver. You know, there's receivers who are on the board, and I'm debating. I haven't started writing my what I think the Browns should do post. I'm deciding kind of what I want to do there. But I guess to me, it feels like maybe they're happier with their receiver room than I am. And maybe they don't see that as big of a need as they might defensive tackle or edge rusher or even linebacker. I think if I had to bet on which side of the ball they were going to pick, I would say defense. Now, a lot of that will depend how the draft shakes out early on tomorrow. But I don't know. It feels like this may end up going defense, even though I really would like to see them add to this receiver room.
If I were making the pick, I probably also would go receiver here. I think there are enough good receivers left to try something. Although I think that a couple of them, they probably would have hoped fell a little bit more than they did. But I do think it's a strong and deep receiver class. And when you watch what Kansas City does, and Kansas City obviously knows what the heck they're doing, they never hesitate to add good, fast receivers to their team. And they did it again today. So I don't know. I just don't think that you can go wrong that way. But I don't necessarily think that's what the Browns are going to do. I kind of agree with you there, Dan, a little bit, that perhaps they might be thinking that they're in great shape there at wide receiver. And to a certain extent, they are in great shape, and there's only so many footballs to go around. And what are you going to do with said Tillman and David Bell and even those kind of guys? But, I just don't know if that's where they're going to go. I kind of almost don't think so either at this point. I don't know. I think they're doing a great job of playing it very close to the vest. Nobody really knows what they're going to do. And Andrew Berry on draft day sometimes has a way of surprising people with what he actually does. So we don't really know where he's going with this, right? I mean, the best example, of course, is the Martin Emerson year. Nobody knew what the heck he was going to do with, with that pick. That was their third round pick that year. And he went cornerback and nobody was feeling it. So I think it could be the same way tomorrow at number 54, that there could be a name called there that we just haven't really thought of much yet.
And even last year, I mean, they trade number 40, whatever it was, 42, 43 for 42 for Elijah Moore. And then they take a receiver with the pick that they got in the Elijah Moore trade. So Andrew is really difficult to put in a box. And I think there's probably a part of Andrew right now, Ashley, who isn't 100% sure what he's going to do. Like, he's got his board and he knows the guys he likes. And I'm sure he's got, like, in his head, you know, I hope this guy is there. Maybe I would trade up to get this guy. Or, you know, if these guys are off the board, we're going to trade back. He obviously has a plan. But at this point, he's probably not even 100% sure what he's going to do. I mean, how could you know before the draft actually gets going and it gets to you? So I don't think he's going to kind of paint himself in a corner here either, as far as a position is concerned.
No, and we talked about that earlier in the week, and I do think it's part of what shows off that this roster is, for the most part, in a pretty decent shape. I think no matter where they go, and I think maybe you guys talked about this on a Hey MK pod, it's this idea of, I don't think no matter what position they draft, that they are going to need that guy to step in and be a starter day one. I think for the most part, it's about adding depth. And there are certain positions you can make an argument for, hey, like they need more depth on the D-line, add something different to the receiver room, add more depth to tight end or linebacker. You can make those arguments, but I don't think you're going into tomorrow being like, they need to go after this position because there's an obvious hole here that needs to be filled and you can do it for cheap in the draft. I think that kind of speaks to how far they've come, but I do think that it ultimately is going to highlight this philosophy that we've really seen Andrew stick to the last two drafts without a first round pick as one of Mary Kay's. Is that Shelby or Kylie?
It's Shelby. I'm sorry.
I like to think Shelby is agreeing with me.
Shelby has Shelby has some draft opinions. We know that. We don't know what they are, but Shelby has some draft opinions.
Shelby and Paul Inca have draft opinions, man. This is adorable. This is adorable. I don't even have words, which isn't great for a podcast, but she is adorable. She wanted Mary Kay's attention, and she's succeeding.
Yeah, right now Mary Kay is holding Shelby, and Shelby, you probably heard Shelby purr or whatever that was when
meowing,
when
Dan.
Yeah, kind of a little meow slash purr kind of thing. It was there you go. We're a pro animal podcast.
We are
dogs barking, we have cats meowing. We are a pro animal podcast when it comes to all of this.
Yeah. I would like to know Shelby's thoughts from the war room, quite honestly. Just stick her in there and let her make the pick.
They should have like a cat in the war room or like a puppy or so. There should be something in the war room to like calm everyone down.
Or like puppy yoga.
Yeah.
Do some puppy yoga.
Don't they do goat yoga?
So they do. They do puppy now too.
And listen, I love Moose, but Moose is not, you know, he's fine. He's fine, but he's not what I'm thinking. He's not the vibe that I'm thinking.
Moose is very chill. Moose just needs to lay there at this point and kind of relax. But
that's not what you're looking for.
So I agree.
Moose is not a therapy dog. I don't think. So, 54. Mary Kay, Mary Kay and Shelby. What would you do if you were the GM? You kind of touched on it, but you know, what would you do if you were the GM of the Browns at 54? What would you be targeting? Who are you hoping is kind of there? I mean, there are, because of that run on quarterbacks, there are a lot of guys still there, but it does feel like that run on wide receivers has kind of started.
Yeah, it has. And I'll tell you, I'll answer this two ways. I would probably be trying to find the best weapon that I could possibly find to add to Deshaun Watson's arsenal. And that would probably be a speedy receiver or some kind of a receiver that would give you maybe an element that you don't have right now. I'm not exactly sure which one that would be. We know at this moment, tonight when we're taping this, Ladd McConkey's still available. Torrey Franklin from Oregon is still available. You've got Malachi Corley still available, who's sort of that Debo Samuel type. So I think I would probably tend towards someone more like that, a receiver, someone that can help out Deshaun Watson. But I don't know that they're going to go that route. I think they would tend more towards, I'm going to say, either a defensive end or maybe an offensive lineman, maybe a guard or something like that. So that's where maybe the surprise will come in, where they will do something like that, where they go against conventional wisdom and do something that we're not expecting them to do. So if you had to pin me down to one, I don't know, maybe I'll say, I guess I'll go, let me go offensive lineman.
That is not one I expected. Was that a Shelby pick? I feel like Shelby
You know what? I'm just thinking outside of the box because
it wouldn't shock me.
Right? I mean, we're all thinking a certain way, but when you think about it, he did tell us that they're offensive line snobs, right? And you've got Joel. I mean, on any given day, Joel could decide that he is going to retire. You never know how long he's going to be around. You've got other considerations at other positions. I guess you have to decide, are you going in for the long haul with Jed Wills? Are you not? Right? I mean, how long is Jack Conklin going to be around? So you do have to be thinking about some of these kinds of things. And we know that they want to build tough through the line. So it could be a defensive tackle. It could be an offensive lineman. It could be a defensive end. I feel like it, but who, it could be a safety for all we know. I mean, we really just don't know the answer to that. So I guess for lack of any type of inside knowledge or anything intelligent here, I might just think, why not go with some kind of an offensive lineman?
I could see it. Now that said, while you were talking, Mary Kay, I was looking through some of the receivers who are still on the board, and I have the beast that Dane Brugler puts out pulled up here as well. And I'm starting to feel like Keon Coleman is very Andrew Berry. He's a third year. He's played 3 years in college. He's played 34 games, two years at Michigan State, and then, of course, last year at Florida State. He turns 21 in May, so this is a three-year player who's really young. Now, his 40 time at the Combine wasn't great, but I don't think he's, like, slow. I just think he didn't run a good 40. I sort of wonder, he feels like an Andrew Berry type of player. A little bit like Greg Newsom was, right? A guy that had played a lot but was still really young. Keon Coleman feels like that type of player. So I think if he were to start to pop up around the 50s or whatever, that would be a name. Just kind of guessing here on what we've seen Andrew Berry do and the types of players he's taken. I wonder if Keon Coleman could be that guy. But like I said, as much as I would love for them to take a receiver, for whatever reason, it feels like a defensive player might end up being the guy there. But I'm just going to circle Keon Coleman for the sake of this podcast and take those victory laps around the media room if I stumbled onto a correct pick here for once in my life. Ashley, you're the Browns GM. What are you doing?
That's how I feel. You know, if I'm the Browns GM, I have to stick to my gut here. And I have to say, go get a D tackle. I think there's going to be a lot of good ones left. I think you have some obvious snaps that are going to be available at that position because Jordan Elliott is gone. I think it's becoming the new really popular position. I mean, we saw what those contracts looked like this free agency cycle. I think if you can hit on one of those guys, and the key I think has to be he's good at getting after quarterbacks and he has some versatility and can maybe line up on the outside. I think there's going to be a couple of guys available. Like, you don't even have to trade up and get somebody necessarily, I don't think, because Chris Jenkins can move around. Mason Smith can move around. And if we want to talk victory laps and Andrew Berry guys, I have to go to bat one more time for Mason Smith, because I joked he was my combine crush after hearing him talk and just thinking he has so many Andrew Berry characteristics. Former five-star recruit who went to an SEC school. He's pretty young. He has some injuries, which I think is going to scare some teams away. But I mean, I've noticed not so much that I've been, you know, following him exactly because I think, oh, that's who they might be interested in. It just seems like he's been getting more buzz, though. So I don't know if that's good or would hurt the Browns' chance of getting him. And then Chris Jenkins has versatility and a really, I think, incredible football pedigree. His dad's a four-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle. He played in the NFL for 10 years. So that's what I'm doing. I think it's a cheap way to beef up a position that's getting really, really popular in a scheme that it has a ton of value.
Okay. Just one other thing. I was shocked that Buffalo traded with Kansas City. We were talking about that before we hit record, and I think we were all on the same page. Like, what are you doing, Buffalo? This is the team you're supposed to beat. You can't trade with them. Come on, Bills. All right. We're going to wrap it up there. We've all got some writing to do here, even though the Browns didn't do anything tonight. So we're going to get to that. Well, of course, we'll have full coverage of round 2 and 3 on Friday, as we always do. We'll have news stories, analysis, podcasts, video, all that stuff at cleveland.com/Browns Football Insiders. If you want to become one of them, click on the blue banner at cleveland.com/Browns. And then, of course, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For Mary Kay, Ashley, and Shelby, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.